Welcome to Ignite Your Life. In this series, Brother Mercurial and I will be examining the deeper meaning of the walk of Christ. Join us in this exciting deep dive into the walk of Christ and explore how his life can expand your consciousness. Good evening, everyone. Today we are back again with Ignite Your Life with Brother Mercurial. Today we are going to be continuing our discussion about the walk of Christ. And today we're going to talk about the miracles of Christ, some of the healings of Christ. And we're going to kind of try to dive into this a little bit more. Mercurio, I'm curious about, good morning to you. Good morning. Yeah, it's actually afternoon for me.
Good afternoon. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. What's your location again? I forgot. Where are you located?
I'm currently in Australia.
In Australia. So, oh, wow. Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah, it's just the time zones are a little different, obviously, when you're trying to.
I always get confused about time zones. So I literally Google it every single time for this. I still get my head wrapped up because people say I'm 2 hours behind you or I'm 2 hours in front of you, and somehow or another my brain still gets that twisted. You know?
Right. Yeah. Me too. It's hard to figure out sometimes.
Yeah. So let's talk about these miracles. You know, I was thinking about this. You know, I think you and I were talking about his approach. I'm also thinking about the lessons behind it because I've really been taking a deep dive into the Bible again, you know, and it seemed like from the way that I was understanding it, he was teaching his disciples to do these things, because there was even a scripture that I found that he said, now go heal these people and go cast out their demons. So he wasn't the only one doing it. So he was teaching them how to do it. So I think that really kind of states that the disciples were also at that point when he passed away, their mission was to teach other people.
Oh, totally. Mm.
So this was supposed to be a passed on, you know, generation to generation to generation to teach us how to heal other people and overcome some of these things that cause us problems. Let's start with Mary Magdalene, right? That was kind of fresh on our brain. Do you want to tell the story? Yeah.
Well, I guess, yeah, just to give a bit of context, obviously Jesus did various different types of healing, you know? So there were the exorcisms, which is what we'll talk about shortly with Mary Magdalene. But there was also, as you know, a lot of other types of healing as well. Like he healed blind people. He raised the dead. You know, that's a real big miracle, isn't it? You know, and the story of Lazarus is the prime example of that. He healed a woman of fever, and he healed the man who was lying near the pool at Bethesda for many years because he was unable to get into the healing waters, and Jesus healed him. So we can go into some of those as well, I think, in a little depth, because I think there's a way that he approaches it that's really interesting to look at. But starting with Mary Magdalene, you know, he casts out a demon, doesn't he, from Mary, and her life completely transforms. And if anyone out there's seen The Chosen, you'll see the way they've depicted that, which is kind of, you know, it's beautiful. You know, they approach it that in the way that she has another name, you know, and initially Nicodemus, the very wise, learned rabbi, goes in to try and heal her. And I work in mental health, you know, and from my experience of that, you can see that the way they portrayed her is as somebody who's mentally unwell and she's really stuck inside her room. You know, nobody goes in there because they're all too afraid. And she has these unusual sort of odd behaviors. But also she goes around at night and, you know, there's an implication that she's been a prostitute and other things. And the Catholic Church made quite a lot of that. I don't know how, you know, nobody really knows the true story there, but that's the implication. And so what Jesus does at some point is finds her, you know, which is very metaphorical. It's sort of like how many people discover Christ, I suppose. He just seems to appear in your life. And that's how it happened for me anyway. But he goes up to her and he calls her by name. This is the big thing. He says, Mary, you know, and she sort of looks at him like, oh, no one's called me that before, you know, for a long time, for many years, because, well, in The Chosen, they call her Lilith, but, you know.
Well, that's what Nicodemus said. He was calling her Lilith, and then some guy in that bar or whatever, he was calling her Lilith. I think it was might have been her father or somebody that she was talking to. Everybody was calling her that. And then Jesus comes along and he says, Mary. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think the implications are behind that by calling her name versus calling out the demon? Because in a lot of like casting out that you've seen, like in movies or even the priests, like Catholic priests, they have to know the name of the demon to be able to cast them out. So Jesus takes a whole different approach. He doesn't name off the demon. He names her. So why do you suppose that happened?
Right. And this is what is really interesting, I think, about it. You know, as you say, Nicodemus goes in, tries and fails. And he's supposed to be the expert. You know, he's supposed to be the local, but he kind of almost runs away. And then just in a dark alleyway, Jesus comes up to her and says, Mary, come forth, you know, and it's almost to me that that's he's calling her true identity, her true nature out. Because once someone knows what their true nature is and they have that connection with the divine, demons will just disappear. There's no like darkness disappears. You know, it's like they've got nothing. It's got nothing to hold on to. My theory is that that's what he was doing. He was calling her, and only God knows your name, you know, really, you know. So he knew it. He could see. He could. He understood what her name was, and he said, it's almost like he reached deep into her soul and he pulled her back out. And the demon couldn't be with her anymore. It wasn't, you know, it's not possible to attach itself to her anymore. Yeah, it's a very different approach because, in fact, there are other situations where he commands a specific demon to get out of someone. But, you know, in this instance, what she needed, and I guess this is the other thing about healing, is that it has to be individualized. She needed someone to find her essence and bring it back. Because she'd almost forgotten who she was, you know. And I think that happens in life, right? You know, we go through life and we kind of get involved in something good or bad or whatever. Like people become addicts or whatever. And they forget who they really are. They just get that thing that they're attached to becomes the whole thing in their life.
That's really interesting. I mean, I'm thinking this. I'm also in the mental health industry as well. And so it's like, it's very interesting to me because you're calling that out because sometimes like when I'm working with clients and they're dwelling in this dark space and they're believing all these negative things about themselves. I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. I'm this horrible person, blah, blah, blah. And I don't see that because what I do is being an empath, I'm also a very trained empath, so I can dive into them and I can see their true nature. Okay. So I do the same thing in a lot of aspects is I'll say, I want you to see what I see. I see this incredibly caring, loving person. And you know, I kind of keep on reinforce that. Now I'm not Jesus, obviously, so it's not a one and done, but it is definitely something that works that when you acknowledge that beauty, they start to pay attention to it. So it reminds me of kind of like saying, hey, do you see that fly on the wall? Well, you didn't see the fly until you paid attention. You're like, oh my God, there's a fly on the wall, you know? Or like cars, you know? I bought a Kia Soul and I'd never even seen the car before. Mm-hmm. And I ended up buying this lime green colored one. And I'd never even seen that color in a car before. But as soon as I bought it, I started seeing it all over the place. So it's sort of like when you put your consciousness into something, you become aware of it. So to me, it kind of sounds like that's what he was doing, is waking up that aspect of who Mary really is. And from some of my research that I've done, you know, like from other books, like the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Gnostic books and some of the lost books of the Bible, you'll find that more about Mary that wasn't, she wasn't a prostitute. She was actually in the healing industry. And like, she was helping people. She was a good person, but somehow or another, something ended up happening. Now, what happened? I'm not really sure. Maybe you would know more about that. But there was this thing that happened. And then Jesus came along and like reignited that.
Yeah, I think that's right. Absolutely. And, you know, you think how many times, you know, we've been distracted on something, or we have low self-esteem, or we have something that pulls us down into the kind of the material world and makes us identify with something that's not really us. I mean, these not necessarily bad things. You know, I'm a sports person, or I'm a this football team supporter, or I'm, you know, something that it's not really your essence. But you kind of identify, and it gives you something that you can then talk to other people about and gain respect about, and so on. But actually, it's not really you. It's almost like not everyone, but some people are afraid to show who they really are. You know, and I think in the healing industries, sometimes it's a different thing that I've seen people who are very open to others and obviously very caring and empathic. But the problem with being open is it can pull you into other things. And on a more mystical level, you can let demons in. You know, you can let other things in that might be hanging around the person you're trying to help. And perhaps without realizing it, you know, become, you know, influenced by whatever that is. And maybe that's what happened to Mary Magdalene. If that's true, that she was in that industry and she was trying to help people, maybe she got pulled in.
It can happen to anyone, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Life and tragedies and things that happen, suffering, you know, life has more suffering than it has anything else. You know, anybody can be pulled in. It really doesn't matter if you come for money or you're not coming for money. It's, you can see all different walks of life get pulled down by suffering. I wanted to ask you this. I just wanted to get your thoughts on this. You know, they put a lot of energy into demons possessing people. So I wanted to chat with you about that, because is it really a possession, or is it an influence, or is it symbolic? Because if you think about what a demon represents, it represents the lack of light. Okay. So this is an energy force that is far away from the light. So, and this is just my thought. Okay. So I just wanted to get your opinion on it. If it's a lack of light and a person's possessed by that, would it actually be a demon, or would it just be this energy that is sort of dark energy surrounding them that may feel that way? So the person is acting bizarre or negative or frustrated or angry, and because that dark energy has came around them, and that happens from when we get away from the light, when we stop focusing on it, and we seem like it's far away, but it's not. It's just literally like there it is, move towards it again. I'm kind of starting to think that, and like I said, I could be wrong. I've done some lots of conversations with Papa Doc, and he's
he's an interesting guy.
He's a very interesting guy, you know, because he talks about there not really being demons, and you know, that kind of stuff, that these are all energies that, you know, kind of like what we're talking about, that can impact you, even just the energy of the world. So, you know, because we have names on things and definitions, and the Bible being so symbolic, do you think it's possible that it wasn't necessarily possessions, but it's more like kind of like what you're talking about bringing them back into the true self where they're connected to God again? I mean, is that a possibility, or do you think that's way off base?
No, I think you're kind of on the right lines there. I think from my perspective, you know, let's unpack it a bit. What is a demon? What is darkness? And there are many views on this, aren't there? There are many definitions and views. There are biblical views. There are the views of magicians. There are the views of people who practice, you know, different types of religion that have a completely different viewpoint. For example, you know, a very good example is that this idea of the devil that everyone talks about is only really in Christianity as a concept, because in Judaism, the concept is the tempter. You know, there's a part of your lower nature that tempts you constantly and tries to test you all the time. And, you know, there's the story of Jesus being tempted to throw himself off a cliff, and the angels will rescue him. You know, they say, oh, the devil was testing him. But that's more because he's from a Jewish background. I suspect that's that inner tempter concept that we all have. But of course, Christianity's magnified that and turned that into, you know, this is something that's an entity that's specifically against God, and there's a sort of battle going on, which we can look into. That, I mean, maybe there is. You know, what people call a demon can happen on different levels, you know. But I think the whole concept of the devil is something that Christianity embodies and has created very much because of things like the situation in the Bible where Jesus is being tempted, you know, by a lower entity, you know, according to the Bible, you know, the devil tempted him to jump off a cliff and said, oh, the angels will save you, or tempted him by saying, you know, you can become a king and, you know, you can turn these stones into bread and various things like that. So there was this immediate dichotomy, you know, Jesus is God and good, and then this bad is embodied by this entity called the devil. But actually in Judaism, which we have to remember is where Jesus was coming from at the time, there is a concept of a tempter, but there isn't really the same devil idea of, you know, this bad entity that's going to go around trying to eat you all and stuff, which sort of seems to be much more medieval Christianity. You know, but I think different traditions, different cultures also have their own interpretations of spirits and, you know, what these types of things are. So that's one thing. Then you've got the idea that people create, you know, darkness for themselves by becoming obsessed with something or becoming addicted to something, or you know, they lose who they are and they're trying to find it and cure their pain by doing something else, some alternative thing. And then you've got on another level the whole concept of being obsessed and possessed. So what is that? You've got possibly entities on the astral level who perhaps are a human who doesn't realize they've died and might be a spirit that's coming along trying to find a way to re-enter the material world and attaches itself to a person, you know, and it may not be a specifically evil thing, but it just might be a lower entity, like someone who on the earth, when they were alive on the earth, might have been, you know, just a criminal or something like that, who sort of has a lower nature but isn't enlightened and has been doing other things. So they might attach themselves, and then that person finds themselves doing similar behaviors to that, you know, being they might have done. So there's that's one thing. And then you've got like the more serious stuff, which is like a definite entity that may not be from a human perspective or have lived on the earth, but is very dark, you know, and they talk about the lower tree in the Kabbalah of entities that can actually come in, and their goal is to try and bring you down, you know. But in a way, you have to let them in. The only way that works is that there has to be something in the person's nature that they can attach onto. They talk a lot about the devil doesn't have his own clay. He cannot. I'm using the devil as a metaphorical kind of thing to encompass all these dark entities. They can't do anything unless you let them. You know, they don't have their own way to do it. So they have to influence humans and make them do the dark stuff for them. And this can get really serious. You can get spirits or entities from other planes that will try and take over, you know, a willing channel. You know, if somebody's calling out, they've read something in the grimoire and they're trying to perform some sort of dark magic, they're opening themselves up to something, especially if they don't really know what they're doing. They don't know how to protect themselves or anything. They're saying, oh, something, come and help me and save me. You know, they don't sort of care what. And then, you know, guess what jumps in? The thing that's nearest to them, that's lowest down on the planes, hears that and thinks, I'll tell them that I'm an angel, but actually I'm not. You know, there are lots of ways that dark entities who've been around for thousands of years know how to manipulate human beings. So one way of looking at it is perhaps that those things can attach themselves to somebody and influence their lives. And then you've got another even more serious level where something like that might get so close to a person that it minimizes who they are and it almost takes over their body. You know, it almost takes over. And you see these things depicted in Hollywood where someone is under the complete control of a different entity and it's not them, you know, and they'll do weird acts and even to the point of supernatural things happening. There are different levels, you know, so, and I think it depends how open someone is. It's whether they are aware of what they're doing, and they may not be, you know, it may be just an ordinary person who just happens to be open. And most people, let's face it, aren't aware of any other level other than the material world and what they see in front of themselves.
You know, talking about them taking over bodies and stuff. I personally have been around some pretty dark people. I'm not going to say no. I'm not going to say yes. You know, I'll wait until it's proven itself to me. But in my lifetime of 57 years, I have not seen that kind of thing happen. So for me, I tend to kind of think that it's an influence. It's kind of like the Jewish perspective of that negative influence. Maybe you're being influenced by darkness or tempted, like you said, tempter. But I was looking, while you were saying this, I was looking up some stuff on a Jewish site. Basically, they're saying that this he that is subordinate to God is the darker side without light, basically, like I was saying, is unable to act without permission. So then we're kind of getting into a subject of how does a person give that permission? You know, I mean, a lot of people say, I've never given that permission, but I think in a lot of ways we do, because we start like throwing out harsh words to somebody. I hope you die or something. You know, it's like start saying some mean things or wishing things, and you're inviting that behavior that's in alignment. So that energy can kind of either influence or even kind of engulf you. I don't know. You know, I'm still on the fence about possessions.
Yeah, well,
I'm not sure how I feel about it. I tend to not think of it from that angle, not disagreeing with you or anything. It's just, again, I kind of think that energy can be either negative or positive, and energy can take a conscious form, but that doesn't mean that it's quote unquote a devil. I'm not even sure if I actually believe in a devil. I just think that there's beings that can be you know, negative, you know, and I think there's forces in general, like an energy force, like the whole world is fairly negative in general. So you just, the influence of the world itself is almost like a possession. I mean, that's my view.
I mean, there are lots of examples of different, different types of experiences people have had on all the levels. So, and also, of course, positive. You know, you can say an angel could be present with you and influence you also. Or so the mechanism of being influenced or possessed is like, is there, but it's what is it that you're linking into and how does that work? You know, and I know like in the hoodoo tradition and voodoo, they deliberately have themselves possessed by a particular guardian spirits and entities that help them with their lives, you know, and do certain things. And that's a whole different approach. So
they call it either, I'm trying to remember what Papa Doc said. It's like riding the horse, or the horse is riding you, or something like that. It's like it's on their back. So, they take on almost like a form, you know, like they take on that form. Like it's like a coat you put over, sort of. He said it wasn't necessarily an internal possession. Like you're wearing it. So it's almost like you become it because you're wearing it.
Right.
So
there's another example, if you don't mind me saying.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
A lot of people may be aware of is where mediums channel entities. You know, they channel their spirit guides. And the way that happens is it's a very similar mechanism. You know, it's just, you know, an entity draws very close and then speaks through that person. And it can be at various different degrees. It could be very, you know, direct speech. I've seen different things like this, so I know it happens.
Oh, I know that happens too. Yeah, absolutely.
So like, or it can be them just giving information to that medium and then they're speaking it.
Yeah.
But it could be a total takeover, and you're then directly speaking to that entity, and the medium's minimized. You know, they've almost disappeared and allowed their channel to be used to speak to the person in front of them.
I don't know if you know this or not, but I do that. Yeah, I do it with Gabriel. I've done it for probably over 20 years. He and I have an arrangement. So it's like he can literally like kind of take over at any time that he feels necessary and speak through me. So the energy is basically, it's like he's got like this key from this arrangement, and the energy is drawn down. But see, he had to have my permission to do this. He asked me if he could do it. So this kind of goes back to you can't be possessed or unless you're allowing that to happen. It's like you're giving, you know, permission for this. You know, it's like you're pulling it in and saying, you know, but he speaks, he will, he and I have an arrangement where he can speak through me. In the beginning, when it happened, it was almost like I was sitting down. I was in the back listening, even though it was my voice. And then when he was done and he would just stop. And then all of a sudden it was like, I just kind of came forward. It's sort of like this dialogue. I'm listening to you. And then I have something to say and I come forward. It was kind of like that.
Right.
Like I came forward. Yeah. I would come forward and then I would go, wow, this is really interesting. I need to like write this down really quick, you know?
Yeah.
Because some of it was like really cool. And then other kind of like what you're talking about, sometimes I hear things and then I say what I hear. Right. Now, nobody else is allowed to enter except for him. Or just speak through me. I might hear them, and then I speak it forward. So, and then I also do automatic writing as well.
Yeah.
So
of course.
But with me, they don't take over my hand.
Right.
I actually hear the dialogue and I write. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, it's like, I'm dictating what they're saying, you know? I guess it is kind of the same thing, but let's get back to what we were talking about
permission.
What Jesus did, pulling that out of her by reconnecting with her true self.
Well, if we could just touch on, you know, getting permission from an entity, because that's might have a bearing on it. Just because I'm thinking of, you know, the famous thing that's in some of the Hollywood films about having a pact with the devil, you know?
Yeah.
Right. And that usually happens in the context of someone's pain or difficulty or when they're at a very low state of mind, and they just say, you know, something, get me out of this, I need the power to do something, you know, and then it's possible for an entity to sort of draw close and inspire them and say, well, if you agree to me coming in, you can have any power you want, you know. You can, and that's you know, people have said that's happened and saved them, and so they've accepted that without realizing what they're accepting because they're just so desperate to get out of their situation.
Well, I've seen situations that are close to that where they were like not exactly in communication with the spirit, but I've had people tell me that they've said, I've been asking for help from whoever's out there. And I'm like, and I remember a client telling me this and I was like, you do realize that when you just open any door, anything can, you're inviting anything to come in. You know, like, so a lot of times people do it with neglect, lack of knowledge, or just straight up in ignorance of, lack of responsibility of their own personal self, you know, not realizing it. So I think it's important to kind of understand that it may have been almost an accident that, or not a lack of intention. And not making things clear.
Yeah, exactly. And usually it's the person's judgment's clouded because they're in pain or they have poor experiences from childhood that come up, or they have triggers. There's lots of reasons where it might allow that door to be open. So, but yes, I think the other thing about all of those situations is that the person's not in touch with themselves, you know, because they're so caught up in their pain or whatever it is, that they can't see who they really are anymore.
Well, I want to touch on that for a second, because let's say they're not possessed, they're just influenced. Mm. Now, you can be influenced without being possessed, and you can be influenced without asking them to help you. So influence can be, you're just in a negative space. You're around a lot of negative people. So there's a lot of this negative energy that's just surrounding. You ever walked in a room and it was just like made you feel like super heavy. So it's like, you know, there's a lot of negative energy, and then you walk away. Some people say they walk away feeling sick. Some people are in a bad mood. Some people are super tired. It's like all that energy has been like drained from them, or even put them in a bad space. So there's there's a couple of different things. You can be influenced, but you can also be, you can also allow one to take over, I guess. Okay. So I don't know. Let's go back to the story. So she was, from some of the history about Mary is that she came from a fairly wealthy family and she was also a healer. And then something happened, but they don't describe what or how. And she got into a really bad space. And she was being influenced by an entity and it was causing her to behave a certain way. You know, Nicodemus tried and Jesus comes in and he didn't even address it. So that's a curious thing. He doesn't even address Lilith or who was it? Was it Lilith?
That's what they used in The Chosen. I don't actually know what the name.
Oh, okay. So Nicodemus called her one name. And then Jesus shows up and he says, Mary. And he's like bringing her forth. You know, it's sort of like like if Gabriel was here and talking and somebody said, Michelle, I would just go, you know, like pop back, right? What did he do next?
Well, I think it was more what she did next. You know, she started to wake up almost. It was almost like she began to have that realization of who she was. And she realized that there's something different about Jesus, that he was able to help her. So she then connected with him and became probably one of his disciples in a way. It's like something internal happened to her once, you know, it's like she'd forgotten her name and he called it and called her true identity out and probably also connected her in you know, the terms of mystery traditions with what would be her higher self, you know, her higher genius or the part of her that connects with the divine. In a direct way, which then allows that individual soul to be themselves again, you know? So it's not just calling the name, but it's also calling that connection back and saying, come back to God, come back to your higher self, come back to that connection with the divine, and you'll be free. And because of his power and ability, he was obviously able to help her make that connection again really fast. And, you know, it happened immediately. And you know, in the film, she says the lines to Nicodemus, you know, I was one way and then I was another, and what happened in between was him. You know, well, that's not biblical, that's not in the Bible, but it sort of describes what happened internally for her. You know, and how many people does that happen to? You know, I know quite a few people who've suddenly rediscovered, you know, their true nature or the real self or their real purpose in life. And it can take an event to do that quite often. It can take, like, maybe the birth of a child, for example. I know people who've given up their addiction because they had a child and that becomes their purpose in life. And I know people who converted to Christianity and that's the same thing that happened. You know, they found, Jesus came and found them in their world somehow, maybe through reading the Bible or through some other discussions with priests or whoever it is. And that person suddenly has a realization. It's like a huge realization of, oh, you know, what was I doing? Now I know who I am and what I'm doing, you know? So yeah, it can happen. I know people again who've had addictions where that's happened. You know, it's been a sudden realization. They've spent their whole life blaming and, you know, being angry with the world, which I suppose in itself becomes a sort of possession. Because people can get like constantly angry, can't they? And then there comes a point where actually they realize, oh, I actually have to take responsibility for my issues and my concerns. And at that point, they realize it's about my connection. It's not about all the world and what people are saying or doing. It's actually me. And then that they somehow get in touch with that, the reality of who they are, and they get out of it.
Absolutely. Let's talk about some of the other healings that Jesus did. So he did quite a bit. Like he did some miracles. Yeah. We could talk about some of the miracles he did, you know?
Yeah, sure. I mean, simple ones, I guess, are around healing blind people. That happened a few times. Healing someone of leprosy. Healing the man who was sitting by the pool at Bethesda, I believe, where the man was sitting by the pool for over 40 years. And the thing with that story was that, according to the Bible, an angel used to descend in that pool at a certain time each day. And if if you were the first one to enter the pool at that time, you would be healed, you know. But if you didn't make it, you'd have to wait till the next day. And so this guy had been waiting for years for his chance. And because it was his leg that was damaged, he couldn't get there fast enough. And other people usually beat him to it. And no one would carry him to it. So Jesus comes up to him, basically, and says, and this happened on the Sabbath, by the way. So this is another whole angle that, you know, you're not supposed to do anything on the Sabbath that constitutes work. But we'll come back to that.
Okay.
So he goes to the guy, he goes up to him and says, you know, basically commands that he's healed, and he's healed, and he stands up. He says, get up off your bed and walk, or get up off your mat and walk. And it's almost like he gets the guy, this, which is an interesting process. Like, how can you just tell someone to do that? And Jesus could. It's almost like he clicked into that guy's real nature and said, you know, what are you doing? You're allowing yourself to lie on this mat for years doing without any success. Get up out of this situation and walk. Get up out of the constant negativity of like, oh, I'm stuck here forever, and pick up your bed, pick up your life, and start walking and doing and living it, no matter what. Even if you can't get in the pool, you know, that's not the point. It's kind of like, get up. And so he becomes immediately healed. He gets up and he starts walking, and, you know, it's a miracle. He's amazed.
I think a lot of that comes down to the belief that people had in him, that he was able to influence people. So, like, let's just look at some of the symbology behind that.
This guy didn't know him at all. To him, it's a stranger asking him why, you know, to get up off his mat. But I know what you're saying. I know there's a lot of other.
Yeah, well, I mean, but he had this ability to be able to influence people. He could move people into a different state. And there's a lot of people that are very, like, you know, like that. They can move a person into a different state just by the way that they speak. And, you know, and it can kind of shock them outside of that loop that they get stuck in, you know. But I've had clients that have said, I can't. And they're literally the same. They're sitting on a mat, not moving forward. And they say to me, well, why can't I be more productive? Why do I always give up? Why is it that I can't move forward, or I can't create success? And I'm like, because you're not doing it. You just need to get up and do it. Take a step forward and just start moving forward. Just do the work. And
right.
People expect, like, miracles to happen with one little thing I do. You know, like, I'm going to become an internet success because I put out a couple of videos. Well, it didn't work for me, so I'm going to sit here and I'm going to complain because it doesn't work for me. Or you could get out there, you could do this on a regular basis consistently until you build a following. And some people, that could take years, you know, but are you going to give up just because it doesn't work in a short period of time? Or are you going to continue to do that and trust that it's what you put out that you get back, you know? And it's that science behind it. It's energy in, energy out kind of thing. What you put out there, you're going to get back. You know, so people will start to follow you. If you're consistent, they'll be consistently watching you. And, and it kind of goes back to everything, you know. It's like, if I love, I'll get more love. If I'm consistent, people will be consistent watching me. If I give a lot of value, people will come back and give, you know, something back to me. You know, maybe that's through just following me, or, you know, a certain direction or something. But it all really kind of comes down to that specific law of the universe. You know, that's the bottom line. That's how it works. But you find that people do that with all aspects. They try something for a month and they give up because it didn't work. Well, it didn't work because you gave up. You know, when I'm thinking of that story, I'm thinking very symbolically. I'm thinking of, he's sitting on his mat and he's dwelling on the fact that this is an issue and he's not moving. He's not getting into the water. All he had to do was get into the water. And if you remember, that's a symbolic thing in the Bible. Water is, like, talked about all the time. He has to get into the water, right? What is water? What is that? The water represents what in the Bible? Like we've kind of talked about this.
Right. We talked about this before. Spirit and, you know, all of that. Yeah.
So all he had, so if the water is spirit and it's about transmutation and transformation and getting into that flow, then all he had to do was step into the spirit to be healed. Yeah. I mean, and we're looking at, like, our whole point here is to kind of look at the symbology. So, like,
I'm kind of
diving into these things that we've talked about, and I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, yeah, that's what it is. He's basically saying, just do it.
Yeah.
Get up and walk. Okay. No more excuses, buddy. Just do it. And the guy's like, okay, it's that simple. Yeah, it's that simple. Just do it.
Yeah. And when he does it, he's healed.
Yeah. It's like, oh, wow, he's healed.
So, you know, he just needs to be in touch with himself.
Yeah. What do you think about that miracle about Jesus walking on water? What do you think that's about? Like, I mean, there's, again, we have the symbology of it. You know, what does water represent? I mean, that's the thing that really needs to be defined. And then walking on the water, what does that mean?
Like, right. Well, my take on it is, again, and also there's the interesting situation with Peter stepping out of the boat onto the water, you know, and Jesus is walking, standing near this boat. He's walked across Lake Galilee to the boat on the water. And then he says to Peter, well, you've got faith, you can step out as well. You know, you can walk towards me. And while Peter's focused on Jesus, he's able to do that. As soon as Peter stops and starts looking around and saying, oh, I'm walking on water, he starts sinking. So I think it's something to do with, to answer your question, that, you know, a person's mastery over their life at that point, you know, which requires a connection with the divine. You know, it's all coming back to that. Once you have a full connection with the divine, you become master over your life and nothing, you won't sink or drown in anything. So I think it's, again, symbolic of, you know, a person being so kind of aware and awake and connected with the divine that actually nothing, they have command over everything. And Jesus, of course, could command the elements. He could command everything. Mm-hmm. So if he told them to support him while he's walking, they'll do it because they know he's this fully realized being, you know? And so.
Well, yeah. So it's like two parts, you know, it's like, it's the walking on water. So if we look at it, what does walking represent? It's moving towards something, right? And what is water? Water represents life and the spiritual life is specifically. So if you're saying walk, which is move towards the spiritual life. Okay. Mm. So then he gets up there and he's doing it. And one of them gets up there, they start doing it, but then he falls, right? He starts thinking, what happens in our life? We get all spiritual. We start finding Jesus. We start raising our hands up and we're feeling the spirit. And then what happens the rest of the week? You fall, right? You fall back into that darkness and the influence and all the stuff that happens. So I also think that there's some symbology behind that that's saying, hey, you know, you can walk on water. You can take control. You can walk towards that spiritual goal. And you know, but like, what purpose did he even say? What did he even say why he was trying to get him to walk on water? Like,
it was just in the heat of the moment, you know, that this storm was going on and he was there and he just said to Peter, well, okay, come and walk towards me. And so Peter, if you have faith, walk towards me. So Peter gets out of the boat and he has complete faith in Jesus and he does. He walks on the water towards him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a spontaneous thing that happens.
Yeah, but then you think about that. He's saying, if you have faith, walk towards him. He's literally on the water, which is that high spiritual flow. So he's moving towards it and he's telling him, if you have faith, move towards me in the spirit, basically. And then what happened? He sank because he got scared and he lost faith. You know, so did this happen in real life? I mean, like, did he really walk on water? I think what's more important isn't Jesus performed this absolute crazy miracle. I mean, he did, but that's not the point behind it. The point is the symbology around it. It's like, why is he telling the story? Because if you're looking at this symbolically, you can understand that there's a purpose behind the story. Look at the story about, and you may be better at telling the story than I am, but you know, where they were trying to feed the masses and there was like only like one fish or one piece of bread or something. And suddenly there was all this food. Well, what happened? If you think about it, he brought that energy forward about him presenting something. So somebody else brings a piece of bread and somebody else brings some fish and somebody else brings this. Because everybody together and doing it, now there was a lot of food. If you think about it, there's a story behind that.
There's so many beautiful miracles out there like that, that we could spend a long time going into each one and delving into the depths of it and why it happened. But I think a lot of it is to do with that divine connection. That seems to be the theme that's running through a lot of these things, is to reconnect with the divine and the, you know, that part of yourself. If you don't believe in God, then maybe just that part of yourself that is your higher self, your superego in psychology terms. Try to connect to that, and then your life will begin to improve. And it does often. You may lose things, but it's probably because they're not really meant to be there.
You're absolutely right. And I probably one of my very first meditations I ever did, I had this vision of Jesus, and he was on the beach. He and I were sitting on this rock and we were talking. Suddenly, in the midst of us talking, he's telling me about when I was a human, I could, you know, I was in control of the elements. And he said, I could move mountains and I could command the wind and the water. And then suddenly, this huge wave comes towards me, right? At that time. And I went, like, and I jerked back, and he put his hand up in the air and he froze it. And he said, why do you fear? Don't you believe that I will keep you safe? And I said, well, because this water just kind of came towards me and I thought it was going to kill me. And he said, do you not have faith? And so he asked me, what does faith mean? So then my Christian background kind of kicked in, you know, and I was like, to believe that you are my personal savior. And he goes, well, kind of, but not exactly. He goes, if I tell you to believe in me, what does that mean? As he was telling me this, I had to sit and reflect for a second, believe in you. And he goes, believe in what I'm telling you. Believe in what I'm showing you. Believe in what I'm teaching you. And he said, do you believe that I can protect you from harm? You know, so I was like, okay. All right. Okay. So then he says, he points to this mountain that was out in the distance. He goes like this, and he moves his hand across the air and the mountain moved. And he said, I taught my disciples that with faith, you can move a mountain. Because what is your mountain? And I looked at him and I said, well, Jesus, that's all great and dandy, but as a human being, I don't have the powers of a God, and I can't be like moving mountains around. And he said, he goes, when I was human, I mastered the element. He goes, but that's not the question. I'm asking you, what's your mountain? What mountain do you need to move? And so he was using the symbology to show me that, yes, I might have been able to do all this stuff, but it wasn't about that. Me moving a mountain.
Absolutely.
Me moving the water, me walking on water. This was just a representation to show the symbology of what I'm teaching you. What is your mountain, Michelle? What is your mountain? And then you have to have faith that you can move that mountain. Okay. And this kind of goes back to the thing that in the very beginning that I was saying, is that, you know, Jesus taught his disciples how to heal and how to cast out demons. And then his disciples were charged to go out and teach the same thing. So if that's the case, here we are generations and generations later. And so another, the message got moved. It's like, what is the message? The message was, is that you can all be healers. You can all be, you can heal yourself. You can heal others. You can, do the same things I did. And that's what he was trying to tell me is it's not, you can move that mountain if you believe, you know, whatever your mountain is, that's all you have to do. That's what he was trying to explain to me in this meditation. So, he was showing me how.
Yeah. What's the formula?
Yeah. What's the formula? He was saying basically it's about believing and, you know, and knowing that the power is within you. And this kind of goes back to that thing about the kingdom of heaven being within you, you know, it's all inside of you. You can do this. I go into the deep dive of the symbology and understanding what does this mean? Now, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'd be interested in just looking at that formula because, you know, some people might take that to mean that, you know, egotistically, you have the power to go and heal someone. Oh, look at me. I'm healing people, you know. If you have, you realize, oh yeah, I have this inner power. Which power is it? But I think there's a deeper thing that he did with the disciples. He actually connected, he gave them the power. You know, he kind of, it wasn't only saying you can go and do it. It was also, there was a connection made probably for each of them with their divine self. And a big thing happened at, you know, the Pentecost idea that they were up in this upper room and suddenly they had all these experiences and winds were rushing and they had this, you know, they were speaking in tongues and all kinds of things happened as they made that connection with this divine, the Ruach Elohim or whatever you want to call it, this Holy Spirit that descended into each of the disciples and gave them that power.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they could go out and really do it, you know, and they did. They went out across the world and spread this, the message. So I think it's, yes, on one level, it's saying, yes, you can all be healers. But at the same time, also, you've got to learn how to connect with that divine source really make it effective. Yeah,
that's exactly it right there. You hit the nail on the head. Some people say, you know, that the disciples were all initiates and they were given the power to initiate and teach and bring that energy current into these people. But that energy current is literally about like showing them how to make that connection to that higher spirit to be able to make that and
be the channel.
Yeah, exactly. And just letting that, allowing that energy to flow through them. I want to close with something. I had a client say to me one time that I'm just going to suffer because that's what God wants me to do. I'm going to suffer in the name of God. I'm just going to, you know, my life sucks and all this other stuff, but I was born to suffer. So I'm going to suffer in the name of God. And I said to her, what if God told you something different? And she said, what do you mean? And I said, what if God told you? And this is just what if. What if he came to you and he said, I don't want you to suffer. I want you to allow that energy of myself to move through you, live through you, and for you to just be happy. And she said to me, she started crying immediately. And she said, it's not that easy. It's not that easy. And that is the mentality of most people. They do not believe. They want to believe that God's going to save them from damnation and hell. But they do not want to believe or can't believe that that power can transcend them if they allow it.
Yeah.
And this is basically what Jesus was doing was he was by example, he was showing you, here's what you can do. If you connect to this, this is it. And I think that because these people had no clue, he said through me, because he's showing them like I came here in flesh and I'm doing this. So I'll show you. And through me, you can. So I also think that he's also talking about initiates too. You know, it's like through me, you can be initiated into that energy, you know, so interesting to kind of really kind of dive into it.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. Absolutely. And that was a great example of your client because people allow themselves to remain stuck. I mean, sometimes I have compassion. I understand people are feeling stuck and it's difficult to see something else when you're in, you know, when the clouds are going across the sun, you can't see the sun, but the sun is still there. You know, but you just can't see it at that point. So you probably feel like, yeah, I can't do anything. You know, it's easier said than done and all this stuff. So I suppose the goal of the healer is to try and lift someone out of that perspective somehow or help them, give them a story or give them a means to really raise up out of that even just temporarily, out of their current state.
Mm-hmm. I agree, 100%.
Also, it could take a longer time. I mean, the point of initiation in the mystery traditions is to lead somebody through a long process to get to the point where they can do that, isn't it? You know, like this mm-hmm. idea in the Hermetic mysteries of henosis, union with the divine, which is what a lot of things like the Golden Dawn and other esoteric systems are doing, is leading you step by step up the tree of life, in that case, up to the point where you can have that divine connection again. Because mm-hmm. in the Western world, we're so caught in our heads, aren't we? We're so like, you know, it's all about logic and it's about TV and so on. You need like a ladder to get you out of that and slowly lift you up. So there are many ways. There are many ways. You know, you might be able to do it in one session. And Jesus, with his power, was so obviously so good at it and in influencing people and so on, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
He could achieve that really fast. But some people, it does take longer, doesn't it? It's but it's the same goal. It's the same ultimate realization that people get that frees them.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. With that, we are going to go ahead and end this podcast with the possibility of knowing that you can bring that energy into you and transform your life. We'll talk to you in the next episode. See you then.
Thank you. Bye for now.